You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 27th of November. The final play and no timeout. After 36 hours of analysis, maybe I have it finally right. We'll talk about the Indiana Pacers, who I kind of love. And you know what? This Jazz team in some ways is exactly what we thought it would be. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, a lot of geeky numbers, and hopefully making it way more fun to be a Jazz fan. Happy Thanksgiving. Wednesday before Thanksgiving. I don't think I'm doing a show tomorrow just because I don't think anybody would listen. Frankly, we're in Memphis, or we'll be in Indiana, start the day, fly to Memphis before team dinner. So there's nothing actually precluding me from doing that, but I don't think that anyone will listen. I think you all have better things to do, hopefully, on Thanksgiving. What I am going to do is I'm going to record a Locked On NBA with Ben Golliver tonight, kind of on some big picture, almost 20 games into the season type discussion, and get his thoughts and just kind of do a – so that will be evergreen and last until Monday. So if you are out shopping on Friday and want something, we can do that. That's the plan. In regards to Thanksgiving, I hope you have someone to spend it with and have a wonderful time. And this is kind of – I feel like this is the – it's pretty commercialized, but it's not as commercialized as, you know, Thanksgiving is so uncommercialized that actually Christmas has already started. So I always kind of enjoy this holiday more than anything. I want to say on that note how incredibly thankful I am to you for tuning into this show. I was actually looking at some numbers last night. It's amazing the growth and the amount of people that listen. There's a bunch of really exciting things that are going on for the network. We've made major strides. Raised our first round of funding, and none of that would be possible without your commitment and your dedication to shows like this. And then to Jazz fans specifically, you know, it's being the radio voice of the Utah Jazz is really an easy, easy job when the passion of our fan base is as incredible as it is, then it makes it super easy to, you know, get up, do your work, fire up, and have the energy that you need to have to do this show. So thank you very, very much. Today I don't know if I have the energy because I totally screwed up last night. I was just working, looking at the Pacers, doing some other stuff, but predominantly looking at the Pacers. And all of a sudden I just looked down and my clock's at 11:45 and I'm like, oh, good. And then I realized that my clock was on Mountain Time. So I pulled the old 2 a.m. and I'm too old for that crap. I thought this was really interesting. So the Jazz the other night, there's 20 seconds left when they get the rebound, and they don't take the timeout. And, you know, it's one of those decisions. But here's what I thought was interesting. Quinn's making a decision at that moment, and it took me until, like, late last night to realize all the different aspects that has to go into that decision that fast. So, one, basically, is who gets the rebound. Like, I never thought about this. But Boyan got that rebound, and so you actually have an athletic player ready to go. Rudy's in the game, he gets the rebound. Maybe you call a timeout because it's going to take a while to get set up. The second one that I never thought of at all was Milwaukee had a foul to give. So, if you call timeout either at 20 or at the one point I thought he might have considered calling timeout when it they all kind of looked over to him, and they didn't seem quite set right, and there was probably 11 seconds on the clock, and Mike started to come toward Donovan. Well, even if you call timeout there, now Milwaukee has a foul to give, which I had not even contemplated. Like, yesterday I sit on the show having had 6 hours or 8 hours, maybe 12 hours, to digest what had taken place. I give my analysis, and I like, okay, it was half decent. The concept of my analysis was I like free flowing because you get better points per possession, and you have a veteran team and you're showing faith in them, and you know, okay. And I actually think the other option here that really we haven't discussed, again, I didn't think about this until later, is you actually could rush that up the floor pretty fast. Like, you're down two. Like, you can actually go get a layup or try to get a layup in a fast break circumstance with 14 seconds left and then just try to defend, which against Giannis probably would not have worked very well. But it's interesting. So my point here is, and then we'll get into, there's more of it here to discuss in a second. I sat there, my kind of point on this is that I had 12 hours to think about all the aspects. Now that I'm at 36, I keep thinking of new pieces. And yet these are the decisions that these guys have to make in a split second. And it's not as simple as we make, do you call it, like, okay, so I am fundamentally pro no timeout. Well, I'm really pro no timeout if they have a foul to give. I'm even more pro timeout, which I hadn't thought about, was Giannis. If you call a timeout, they're going to position Giannis defensively to bother you. Brook Lopez made a hell of a play. Jeff Green's in that corner. Brook Lopez comes over, blocks the shot. The other one that I didn't think about is we got Donovan to his right hand coming downhill. That's pretty much all you can ask. If you're going to do that with Donovan and what the Jazz have been running most of the time is they actually throw it in the backcourt, and then Donovan comes downhill and accelerates off of some other action. There's some action that they've run. I don't want to get too specific because I don't know how many times they've run it in my head and how many times I've just seen it in practice. And Donovan's, it's pretty similar to where they were. So my point on this is rather than continuing to kind of drag you all through it, here's just one play. We all react on Twitter to it. Most people actually, I think, were pro no timeout. It's kind of the, if you have a veteran team and you have good players and you don't have to manufacture something. Now, what's interesting is there's just so much more being in this decision than even any of us are contemplating. Now, the next question is, what is the time by which you call a timeout? Now, I asked that to a bunch of people yesterday. That's an interesting debate. When is it 8 seconds? Is it 5 seconds? Some thought it was as much as 12 or 14 seconds. That having the 20 really mattered. I didn't realize this. Because I wouldn't call a timeout. I don't know. I just wouldn't call a timeout. I think there's very, but if you, now it also depends if your guy's dribbled, because if he rebounds and dribbles, then you can't advance. So you really want to use that timeout to be able to advance the basketball. So what's the second mark where down two or tied, and does it change if you're down two or tied? And it certainly changes if they have a foul to give. The minute they have a foul to give, I don't think you can call timeout. Because you get in at any point in time there and you start your action, they foul, and then you're on a short clock. So, anyway, all the little elements of basketball, I think it's pretty darn interesting to see how we keep missing little pieces of it along the way. One of our sponsors is a company called Sun Print Solutions. Sarah's got a really neat company, Sarah, S-A-R-A, at Sun Print Solutions. Sun Print Solutions, Utah-owned company, which is really cool. Sarah's done amazing work. She and her partner bought the company when it became local Utah company became available. And they have built a printing solutions company that does everything you can. And what I think so neat about it, when I was talking to her, trying to understand the company at Sun Print Solutions, was I said, okay, if I'm the store, how would I use you? And she's like, oh, well, we could send out your flyers, your discounts. We could do presentations, you know, pack, you know, neat, kind of trophy type, not trophy, but, you know, like a really nice book for your vendors. I was like, okay, if I'm Intercap, how could I use you? And she said, well, if you're Intercap, we actually have our qualifications so that we can do financial documents and have everybody's data stay safe and be protected. Plus, we could do any of their mailings and all their statements. And it was then I asked about Hyundai. What could we do with Murdoch Hyundai? And there was we could do pieces for inside the studio, inside the showroom. We could do any type of their flyers. We could do any of their mailings. Like, it was awesome that she has built this company, Sunprint Solutions, to be able to answer any company's needs. Zions Bank, Utah Jazz, the best companies locally in Utah are using her. Email Sarah, S-A-R-A, at Sunprint Solutions. That's S-A-R-A at Sunprint Solutions. I probably should call Blake and Brock and Jeff and go make sure they're using Sunprint Solutions. Sunprint Solutions is the company, and it's Sarah, S-A-R-A. She's a huge Jazz fan. She'll be great to talk to as well. I kind of love the Indiana Pacers. First of all, watching them last night, it's not a surprise for me that they're really, really good. And they're interesting because they're playing the 3 through 12 depth that we had the last few years. Everyone they bring into the game, I like, other than maybe, like, and I don't dislike him, but like, he's not a guy I really love, Justin Holiday. It's interesting, the rejecting the screen guys really were kind of stunned that Indiana's plus minus was 46.5. I think they'll surpass it easy. So the only guy I don't really love when they bring into the game is Justin Holiday, and that's only because Victor Oladipo's hurt. But they're really interesting. So they're starless, unless you think Malcolm Brogdon's a star. I don't. But Brogdon averages 19. Sabonis is having an unbelievable year, averages 19. TJ Warren, who is allergic to passing, so I don't love him, averages 17. And Jeremy Lamb averages 17. So instead of like this Giannis 50 or these teams we've been seeing where it's like one guy, they're coming with this. And then you have Miles Turner, who frankly is totally capable of going off for a good night. Their shooting is really good. They are the seventh best three-point shooting team. They're just 29th in takes. Because Nate McMillan does not necessarily believe in taking a lot of threes. There's an incredible thing about Nate. First of all, Nate's teams always play hard, and they always play right. And the second thing is about Nate is that his teams are amazingly similar year in and year out. So like, oh, well, they don't have a style. No, they totally have a style. They know exactly how they're supposed to play, what they're supposed to do. When you dig in on their year in and year out numbers, how are they compared to their team a year ago? They are, even with that loss of Bogdanovich and the addition of Brogdon, I mean, that's a pretty different team or different players, yet they're very similar. So I really love this team for one, their 3 through 12 depth. Two, their versatility. Three, as much as you kind of criticize, a lot of people criticize Nate, I don't think that's valid. I mean, you look at this team, and last four years, they're 11th in effective field goal percentage, 10th, 13th, 15th, exact same. Their free throw rate is low. They take the lowest free throws in the league, but that's what it was the last 2 years. So that's a bad thing, but it's the exact same. They generally force a ton of turnovers. This year they have not, and they generally don't offensive rebound. This year they have a little bit. They generally don't foul. They haven't fouled. Like, it's amazing how similar they are. When you watch them play, which I did last night and yesterday on the plane with Ron, their rotations are really interesting because they play these different kind of groupings, and they're all kind of good. So their starting lineup is Brogdon, Jeremy Lamb, who's playing pretty well, TJ Warren, who scores. His assist rate is the lowest of anyone in the league. And then you have Turner and Sabonis. So that's unique because they're trying the whole thing that we do. For a long time, we played two bigs. Then their first substitution is Aaron Holiday, who's a lightning quick, small, tiny guard who shoots threes great. Justin Holiday comes in. And then their next substitution is TJ Warren comes in for Jeremy Lamb. But what's interesting is that Justin Holiday comes in for Domantas Sabonis. So they go from being big with Sabonis as a five, Turner's the stretch four. Turner's a great shot blocker. Oh, my gosh. There was a play against Detroit. Or excuse me, against Memphis. Somebody, I think it was Ja, went for a scoop layup. He blocked it on the scoop, but not enough, and then blocked it again in the air. So they make the sub, and their first kind of second unit has two little tiny point guards, and Aaron Holiday and TJ McConnell. And then Turner's your center who can shoot. So they're actually now playing five out. Then they open up the second quarter with an entire bench unit, which is interesting. No starters on the floor. Holiday, brothers, TJ McConnell, Goga, Batazi, the rookie, and Doug McDermott. And I like Doug McDermott. And then he just kind of very easily brings back all five starters. So first is Sabonis will come off the bench, and he'll come in for Justin Holiday. And he'll actually play a minute or two with Goga, so they're back to two bigs, but two different bigs. Then Brogdon will come back for Aaron Holiday with Jeremy Lamb. So then now you have Malcolm Brogdon, Jeremy Lamb with TJ McConnell on the floor. Really interesting. And then eventually he'll bring back TJ Warren and Miles Turner, and that's his rotation. It's different. You'll see. They play, as much as they're kind of one style, they're all physical, they're all tough, they're good defensively, they play a lot of different combinations that lead to different styles or feel. The other night, they didn't have Malcolm Brogdon. And so, interestingly enough, when he didn't have Malcolm Brogdon the other night, Nate played the five-star, he almost went hockey line substitutions. So, He's found a way, which is really a wonderful discussion and debate for us to have some other time, of playing his five starters a huge amount of the time on the floor. And this is like from our standpoint, and I'll get into this coming up here. This, I actually, believe it or not, the show is actually well organized today, and this is actually a little bit of on purpose. So this is a really interesting discussion. And that is, what is the right way to do, whether you have, starters on the floor versus bench people? The old version of this was Doc Rivers used to just play his starters all the time. And survive his bench unit. And there's an argument that maybe we could be doing that. Let me give it to you coming up. Today's show is brought to you by The Store. If you have last-minute Thanksgiving needs, this is your answer. You should have been in your first end of Thanksgiving needs. But if you're struggling, you need that cake to take to someone's house. Cake to floor cakes are there. You need any of your other type of holiday needs, the last-minute stuffing. Maybe you need that last-minute turkey. Their Destel turkeys are there and fabulous. The store is located 6200 South and 20th East. It's located downtown at the Gateway now, right across from the Children's Museum, and there's the mini store at 900 South, 100 West. Any of your last-second Thanksgiving needs, whether it's flowers, whether it's cakes, whether it's stuffing, whether it's marshmallows for the yams, whatever it might be that you might have to go grab over, do it at the store, or if you've got another holiday party coming up, the store has every answer you need. They have trinkets and fun little holiday gifts for you. They have the great local feel with all the local products as well for any of your holiday events, if you're hosting or if you're going to someone's house. Make sure you stop by the store, 6200 South, 20th East. Also located at the store is at the Gateway, the new Gateway store, and 900 South, 100 West. The other thing I would tell you is if you have a holiday event and it's a Locked On Jazz listener, bring them a Mudslide cookie. They will understand the true love that you're bringing to them with that holiday spirit when they deliver a Mudslide cookie. So let's go to one note here on the Jazz. This is actually a little bit of what I another thing I want to talk about today. I'm getting nervous that we're going to not get to, is that this team is really very similar to what we thought it would be. So we thought we'd build this team and that they offensively would be great. And we were wondering if they would still be good defensively. They have slipped now. The Jazz have slipped to fourth defensively. There are, by the way, some inklings that holding to the number one defensive ranking might be tough. But our three primary lineups with our core six guys have, while our offense is 107.1, our O lineup that we all talked about the whole time, offensive rating is a 131. Our starters offensive lineup is a 112, which would put us in about the 64th percentile of all lineups. And our, with Ingles in instead of Donovan, lineup is at about 118.5, and our O lineup is at about 130. O is Conley, Donovan, Bogdanovich, Joe, and Gobert. And that, so our primary offensive lineups are all brilliant. That's actually what we kind of thought this team was going to be. And then the other thing that's true so far about us is that our catch and shoot numbers are through the roof. Now, we're not getting enough, right? We've talked about this a lot. But if you actually think back about all the things we were wondering about this team, when we talked in the offseason, we never talked about how the team was going to be with Emmanuel Mudiay, George Niang, Jeff Green, and Ed Davis on the floor. George played really well the other night. That was cool. That's not what we talked about. Our catch and shoot numbers are sick. Royce is 56% on catch and shoot three. Boyan is 48%. Donovan's 43%. George Niang's 41%. Jeff Green's been really good at it, 39%. Joe Ingles is 36%. Mike Conley's 36%. The only guy who's not a good catch and shooter is Emmanuel Mudiay, and Dante's missed his one. So we knew that. All right, now this gets into this interesting discussion. How much should you play your five starters on the floor? Should you try to always have one starter on the floor? So Indiana has all five starters on the floor 29% of the time. We just were talking about this. Seventh most in the league. And they have the 12% net rating when they do it. They have no starters on the floor 9% of the time. And what's interesting is for no starters on the floor, that's a huge amount. And, well, it's the eighth most amount. And they're the third best at it. Okay? Utah, what are we doing? Oh, I might have had that. Wait one second. Did I get that right for Indiana? Yes. I had that right. Sorry, I just want to make sure I was reading the chart right. Let's go to Utah. The Utah Jazz, as I look to find us. Here we go. We play no starters on the floor, one of the fewest of any team in the league. Might be fine. I mean, that might be good, right? We're trying to avoid that. We're ninth best at it, but we do it 24% of the time. We have five starters on the floor. We're the fourth best team in the league with all five starters on the floor. We're doing that at the ninth most frequent amount. Okay, that's pretty interesting. And when I talk about our core six, we actually have four starters on the floor, the most of any team in the NBA, 31%. And I think, just from a quick scan of this, I would guess that the fact that we have our four of our core six, so of our six, we have four of our core six on the floor, and maybe even five, for 60% of the game. That has to be one of the highest rates in the league. Having five, we have four starters on the floor 60% of the time. That's right up there. And when we do it, we're pretty good. We're the ninth best team with our five starters on the floor. We're the best team in the NBA when we have four starters on the floor. That also means that's the Joe Ingles line. Now, what happens when we dive down is we start, in some of these lineups, we start to struggle. Now, we have three starters on the floor, 28th most, so we try to avoid that. We have two starters on the floor, 28th most. We have one starter on the floor, the ninth most of any team in the league. We're the ninth best, actually, when having that. Net rating is 4.1. When we have two starters on the floor or three starters on the floor, we're actually causing ourselves problems. Interestingly enough. We're minus 21 when we have two starters on the floor. And zero starters on the floor, we're 24th in frequency. So let me recap it. We have our five starters on the floor, the ninth most of any team in the league. We're the fourth best at it. It's interesting. We're the most common to have four starters on the floor. We're the 10th best with four starters on the floor. When we go to three starters, which we do very rarely, we do about the least of anyone in the league, we're the 11th best. The minute we go down to two starters, which we do very rarely, the 28th most amount in the league, we're second to worst team in the league. When we go to one starter, which we do the ninth most of anyone in the NBA, we're the ninth best team. I think there's an argument with this team and who we are that we should be playing the core six and then just balls out energy people. Emmanuel Mudiay is doing a pretty good job in there, so I'm not sure what that means. But and I don't know. Maybe it's Emmanuel Mudiay, Donovan Mitchell, Mia One, Jarrell Brantley, and whatever big we want to play. Just. And the Jarrell Brantley and Mia One are playing like their lives depend on it. Just playing so, so hard. Dante have to do that too. Dante could do it, right? Like, Dante would have to get back to that. You know, by the way, here, I was talking to one of our coaches about Dante. And I said, hey, how's, you know, he said, well, why did we all think a guy would take 9 months of basketball off and come back either the same or better than what he was before the injury? He's like, it's not possible. Like, he's got to work his way up to being back to at least what he was before. He's not going to get better in the process. It's a great point. And I'm kind of guilty of it. Somehow in my mind I had Dante would somehow find a way to get better in the process. And obviously that's not possible. Quick note for you. What teams are the best in the NBA with five starters on the floor? You might, or who are the worst, right? You might want to know. Atlanta and Charlotte are two of the worst. Detroit's not very good either. They're 28th in net rating. Golden State is 29th. So the worst teams in the league are what you'd expect. Milwaukee's starters have this. They don't play a lot together, but they have the number two offense in or. Number two net rating. Denver, whose starters play. Mike, see, this is what gets interesting. Mike Malone plays his starters, all five starters together, 43% of the time, the most of any in the league, and they're fifth best in net rating. When he has four starters on the floor, which he doesn't do very often, they're number one in the league. And then he just survives the rest of the night, which I kind of like. I kind of am in the book that we should either have five or four starters on the floor or one. And the only reason we have one is because we have to, because I think of us with having six guys. And just play your best guys. So, like, New Orleans is the fourth best team in the league. No, that's not New Orleans. Sorry. I don't know. We're the fourth best team in the NBA when we have our starters on the floor, and we're, and I don't know. Now, Joe's got to play. He's not one of our starters. So, the Knicks, the Boston Celtics, by the way, have the best net rating of their starters, and they only play 26% of the time, but their starters are actually the number one five-man, you know, group out there. Minnesota's starters are the third best. No, check it. Miami starters are the third best. Sorry, I have a hard time reading this graph. And they're only 24th on the field, on the floor. I don't know. It's an interesting, interesting debate. of how to use these guys. I kind of love that stuff. All right, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for being so supportive of our ventures. Thank you for your passion. And have a wonderful time and hug those family members and even that crazy uncle or that mother-in-law or mother that drives you crazy. Still, give them a big hug. Talk to you later.